Welcome into the latest Daily Wager Extra podcast. We are taping this on a Sunday night, October 17th. I am Doug Kazarian. Nearly a historic Sunday night in the betting world. We'll get into all that coming up. Obviously, the baseball playoffs are going on, so October is always slammed. We've had some eventful outcomes this weekend, but particularly today in the NFL. We'll get into all that straight ahead as we welcome in Mackenzie Kramer, ESPN researcher extraordinaire and also contributor to ESPN.com's chalk section. Now, Mackenzie, a lot of times you have a bunch of data from a betting perspective, and today it really applies because I know the public did well last week, but the books really took it on the chin today.
Yeah, if you look at the three most one-sided ticket counts of the week, the Chiefs, 91% of the tickets on them, they covered against Washington. The Rams had 87% of the tickets on them against the Giants. They covered easily. And then the Cowboys, 84% of the tickets on them. They didn't cover so easily, but they still got it done at the window for the public, meaning a tough day for the books today.
I tweeted this during the Steelers Sunday night game because my understanding it was a bloodbath, and I asked him how bad it was and what would happen if the Steelers covered. And I asked an odds maker this, a sportsbook director, and this is when the Steelers were up 14-0. Maybe it was 14-7 at that point in the second half. Quote, it's already bad. That would just make it one for the ages. And Seahawks stormed back in the second half. Wild game, wonky officiating, which is normal. I don't hate to be that guy, but, you know, let's face it, it's been pretty up and down with the officiating in this sport. It's just so difficult. But the Steelers almost got the cover. Devin Bush recovered the fumble, started running the wrong way, but I think it was just to get out of traffic and maybe. And then Tomlin, you know, he went conservative, just loved the field goal, but sometimes teams go for it. I don't know. At least a mil clock, who knows. But Steelers win by three, so the books are saved a little bit on some parlays and some straight wagers, but obviously the teasers get there, the money line parlays get there. And basically, what was it, 8-2 in the 1 and 4 p.m. games by the favorites?
Well, they're 8-5 ATS on the week, but if you break that down even further, at 1 o'clock, the 1 o'clock slate, every single favorite covered 7-0 against the spread in the 1 o'clock window right there. So wow. If you had just parlayed all those together, you'd have a pretty nice day right there.
So yeah, it was obviously the Eagles got there Thursday night, Sunday morning, the dog won outright, the Jags, and then the Seahawks won at night. So that Seahawks was kind of big. And then obviously the Eagles, but 1 and 4 p.m. So it was 8-2. And one of those two favorites that didn't cover, it was the Browns against the Cardinals. And a lot of the public was on the Cardinals. So that was almost like 9 out of 10 games went the public's way.
In that Arizona game, that was kind of interesting too, because you don't normally see these teams with 5-0 records getting points right there. In fact, since 2015, they were the seventh team 4-0 or better to close as a betting underdog. And those teams now 6-1 outright in that span. So usually when these teams that are undefeated get doubted as underdogs, they've been covering a lot recently in that scenario. I didn't really like this card very much today. That was one of the few bets I did have. I bet on Arizona as soon as I heard that both Browns offensive tackles were out. That game also had some interesting movement in the total. It opened at 54. It closed at 48.5. There was a lot of wind in that forecast in that game, and it landed on 51. So if you got the number early in the week and you took the under, you got it. If you took the over late in the week, you got it. 37 points in the first half, only finishes with 51, but Arizona gets the win, and they remain the only undefeated team in the NFL.
I'm mad at myself for that game. It didn't pass the smell test, to your point, once the offensive lineman and then Chubb out. And it just was like, you know, now the Kingsbury thing was important for me because I think he's the play caller. Like, I think that was significant. But I just was like, you know, Baker Mayfield's kind of a weak link. I mean, he's good. And that team, he fits well for that team because it's led by its defense and its rushing attack. But I don't know. I'm mad at myself for that one. That was a bad pick.
And it feels like every time I'm watching the Browns, Baker Mayfield is getting looks like a season-ending shoulder injury, and then all of a sudden he's back in the game a little bit later. I'm not sure what to think of Baker with Odell Beckham in the lineup. I mean, I like Odell Beckham. I think he's a very good player, but Baker's stats with Beckham and without Beckham, they're a stark contrast with him being better without Odell on the field. In his career, he's got 32 touchdowns, 28 picks when Odell plays, 22 touchdowns, 4 picks without him. This year, he's got a 79% completion percentage when Beckham's on the field, 59% without. They're just, the Cleveland's a very weird team to figure out this year.
Yeah, sometimes when you feed the puppy, which is give the something that's asking for attention and gets what it wants, it makes matters worse, right? And that's something you learn in the hard way over the years in all facets of life. Now, Arizona remains undefeated, only team undefeated overall, but Dallas is the only team that's undefeated against the spread. Epic fourth quarter and overtime as the Cowboys improved to 6-0 against the spread. Mike McCarthy, just a genius playing chess when everyone's playing checkers, right? Outsmarts Belichick, gets the pick six with Diggs instead of the field goal that he foolishly attempted in my eyes just because it really didn't do a whole lot. It gave the ball back to New England. He could have got a first down and then obviously chewed more clock. But then we saw three touchdowns after that. So a wild finish where Dallas gets the cover. The public was all about the Dallas side. It was very pros versus Joes. And the Cowboys get there in just remarkable fashion.
Yeah, and I feel bad for underbetters in that game. That over-under was 50 and a half. It looked like it was going to be pretty good. And then all of a sudden that Diggs pick six happens, and that game flies over the total not too long after that. Yeah, but like you said, though, I'm curious where McCarthy learned his analytics. I think you have to go for it on that fourth and one. If you get it, you're a first down and a field goal away from basically winning the game because Mac Jones isn't going to come back with 20 seconds left on the clock. As we saw at the end of the game when he called timeout with, 23, 24 seconds left before they kicked the field goal at the end. So I don't know what McCarthy is thinking there, but it came through for Dallas bettors. Covering the 3.5. They're now 6-0 against the spread. The last team to start 6-0 against the spread was the Chiefs a couple years ago in 2018. They started 7-0 against the spread. And one other gambling thing I think is interesting with this game, too, is Trayvon Diggs entered the week 8-1 to be defensive player of the year. He's now got six straight games with a pick to start the year, tying the longest streak in NFL history to begin a year. Seven picks, a couple pick sixes. Diggs is going to remain one of the favorites for defensive player of the year going forward.
I mean, the amount of picks he has, that's a season's worth, okay? Let's give some people some context because it's not exactly fresh in everyone's mind how many interceptions people typically have who lead the league, right?
Yeah, but
I'm so mad because 2 weeks ago, somebody told me to bet him, and I was like, all right, I'm going to need 50-1 because corners rarely win this award. It's usually pass rushers. And then he was 20-1. I'm like, come on, he's going to come back to earth. Even if he's this awesome, they're going to not throw to him, right? They're just going to let him be on one side of the field and go to the other. And then he gets a pick in back-to-back weeks again. It's just insane. And he was 20-1. I thought that was no value. And now it's 7-1, to your point, at least going into the weekend. So I'm annoyed at myself. But again, corners don't win this award. It was only a few weeks into the year. I love me some futures and firing on big numbers. We all know that. But at some point, you got to draw the line.
And to your point, if he was that good, they probably would stop throwing at him. Like, his PFF grade isn't all that great. Like, he's having a good year, but the interceptions are definitely making it look like he's a great year. But as you always have to wonder with these types of voted on awards is what do the voters look at? And that interception number definitely stands out.
Well, and it comes with the territory of the Cowboys too, right? They're playing great. They keep winning games. I think that helps, if not directly, indirectly, right? And the Cowboys' defensive turnaround, Parsons is going to get tons of buzz for defensive rookie of the year, and he's the quarterback of that defense. But Diggs is getting, you know, rightfully so. He's putting up the numbers. And turnovers are big, and obviously that pick six was huge in this Patriots game. So crazy game, one of many crazy games. I thought the Vikings and Panthers was especially crazy. I lost a bunch live betting the under there because Sam Darnold with no timeouts, what was it, 4th and 20? Down the middle, seam pass, and then another one on the left side. Just remarkable, stupid sequence of events that led to that comeback to force overtime, and then the Vikings get there in OT with a touchdown.
Yeah, Darnold 17 for 41, but then in that final stretch in regulation, he looked like every bit the player that the Jets thought when they were drafting him a couple years ago. Mike Zimmer, another coach who was too conservative, passing up a 54-yard field goal that would have basically iced the game for a punt. Wasn't a great situation, but I think that the reward of getting 3 points there is worth more than the risk of losing the 35 yards and giving Carolina better field position. Minnesota has just been a strange team this year. All their games
they've had some field goal issues, though.
That is true. But I mean, they're used to these games coming down to the wire with their field goals. Four of their first six games have come down to a field goal in the final seconds of regulation. Week one, they forced overtime against Cincinnati. Then they missed the game winner against the Cardinals. So Cardinals are still undefeated. They hit the game winner against the Lions, and then they missed this week. So every Vikings game seems to come right down to the wire, no matter who they're playing.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Survivor, no hairy situations like we've had the last few weeks. Rams in a blowout, Colts in a blowout. Those were the two main ones. Even I saw some Chiefs get some action. Steelers got a little bit as well. That was obviously a hairy situation. Chiefs get the cover, finally. So now they're 4-13 in their last 17. There's something off, man. I mean, Mahomes has more picks. He's forcing things. I didn't mean to say that like, hey, I'm just splitting the atom here. And realizing something's off with the Chiefs. I concede that we all know this. I'm still dumbfounded, right? Because this is a back-to-back AFC champ, MVP type player at quarterback, and I'm just still kind of dumbfounded. But they're 3-3. They have a couple winnable games with the Titans and Giants coming up. But they had to work to get there for the double-digit win today.
Yeah. People talk about the Chiefs, like the turnovers are the issue with the Chiefs as much as the defense. They have 14 turnovers in six games this year, most in the NFL. At least the defense showed up a little bit in the second half, shut down Washington in the second half, didn't allow a point. They also kind of threw the ball shorter and got the ball out quicker in the second half. Maybe they found something there with Mahomes. Mahomes' stats, though, are very interesting. Second in total QBR, first in passing touchdowns, third in passing yards, but he's got 9 turnovers in the 6 games, and only Trevor Lawrence has more. So I'm not quite sure what to think of this Chiefs team. As for Washington, they're 1-5 against the spread now, which is the worst mark in the NFL. So Washington had a lot of hype entering this year, and they've definitely failed to live up to that.
Yeah, I touched on it. It was really what Sal Palantonio said last year before the playoff game with the Bucs, that the Washington defense was actually not as strong and stout as everyone wanted to make it out to be. Their numbers were skewed by the weak quarterbacks they were playing within their division. So they played 3 opponents, total of 6 times, and you're looking at DiNucci instead of Dak, right? You're looking at Carson Wentz, the worst version of him, and then Daniel Jones had some growing pains. So they were getting the best or the worst version of everyone, so it made them skew the numbers, and then Brady carves them up, and then this year they've been certainly leaky. So this is not this amazing defense, although they obviously have some talent on the pass rush. And no surprise that they're 1-5, obviously, with the injury to Fitzpatrick. Heinicke just too much of a gambler with the ball, and obviously the weapons aren't there. So you mentioned Trevor Lawrence. Jags get the outright win, so they're in the win column. Houston, them have won. Detroit, 0-6. I think wins will come. I said that a lot when I was giving out my Bengals play, because I was on Cincy -3.5. That was essentially my best bet for SportsCenter that we did a couple times. But Packers continue, what are they, 11-3 straight up and ATS under Rodgers in Chicago?
Yeah, Rodgers, I mean, he said it during the game that he owns Chicago, and the stats definitely back that up. Like you said, 11-3 ATS at Soldier Field, 20-7 overall against the Bears against the spread, 22-5 straight up. It's covered 5 straight meetings, and Green Bay has covered 5 straight games since that opening 38-3 loss. So I guess Green Bay might be back. They're 5-1 against the spread this year.
And it wasn't just Rodgers. I think Favre had a ridiculous record against the Bears as well. I mean, I'm sure he had good success against any team, but just to have that run in the division rivals got to be painful for Bears fans. Hats off to the Raiders. Tumultuous couple weeks here. Their coach steps down, a lot of hoopla away from the field. They go into Denver and pretty emphatic win. A couple plays really swung the game. These long passes by Carr, and I mean, defender could have knocked a couple of these away. But at the end, the Broncos are just too vanilla on offense, and their defense is not as dominant as it looked the first 3 weeks against such weak competition. So nice win for the Raiders to sort of stay in the mix. Vegas improves to 4-2, tied with the Chargers atop the division. But that was a nice win by the Raiders. I was impressed because the line started steaming up. It got to 5.5.
People didn't want to trust the Raiders after the John Gruden move. People weren't sure how to look at that. But you look at both teams today that lost their coaches. Arizona covered, the Raiders covered. So last two seasons, teams that have these midseason coaching changes, they're 4-0 against the spread the last 2 years. So maybe there's something to that, though. Obviously, that sample size is very, very small. Teddy Bridgewater, though, doesn't cover for the third straight start.
Wow.
3-0 to start the year, 0-3 in his last three. It's the first time he's ever failed to cover in three straight games. But the good news is that we're going to get back to what the best Teddy Bridgewater stat is, which is Teddy Bridgewater as an underdog, because Denver's been favored in every game this year. Next week, they're at Cleveland. The early spread on that is +5 right now. Teddy Bridgewater, 18-2 against the spread as a road underdog, though we'll see with Cleveland's injuries. I assume Baker Mayfield's going to play and they'll remain an underdog, but that's a line that I've already jumped on for next week, because I will blindly bet Teddy Bridgewater as a road underdog until proven otherwise.
And they don't have totals yet, right? Because that feels like an under if it's anywhere in the mid-40s.
I did not see a total, but I can take a look. But it doesn't look like it's up yet.
Yeah, they don't put them out this early. So, interesting game there. Nice response. And I mentioned that the Chargers 4-2. A lot of hype coming into that one. That was sort of the marquee game of the early slate, and it was all Ravens. And as the Ravens were pounding them, I just get annoyed at myself. You know, Chargers looked great, but sometimes, you know, they leave it on the field.
I mean, the Chargers got crushed, but I still love Brandon Staley coaching aggressively, trying to coach to win. Went for a 4th-and-1 in his own territory, down 18 in the second half. He got some criticism for that, especially from the announcers. But again, you play to win. You don't play to lose a close game. So I'm fine with them going for that. Ravens got back on the track on the ground, running for 187 yards. Their 44th 100-yard game in their last 45 games after falling short last week.
Yeah, last week snapped the streak.
Yeah, I would have bet laid a pretty heavy chalk last week on them to continue that streak after what happened the week before. But that game was too close to call last week, so I guess they had bigger things to worry about than extending that record.
Yeah, I was joking on Twitter, like maybe they can get a 15-yard penalty and then get more rushing yards because they were right inside the 5.
I was thinking the same thing.
So maybe back it up. God, it's just hard handicapping the NFL. You have to pick those spots. And I hated this card. You mentioned you didn't like the card. I mean, look, we had 9 total road favorites. A couple games stood out. We got there. We lost a couple, but won a few more than we lost. So I did okay in like pick 'em leagues and things like that. But just a really tricky, you know, you're so conditioned to take points, but it's like bad teams at home, right? Against good teams, like the Bears are okay. They're catching 4.5, got up to 6. So just at first, you're like, I mean, Lions +3.5 against the Bengals. Yeah, there's just like, it was some sticky situations. But road teams continue to take care of business, right? I mean, what's the overall count now with road teams?
9-4 against the spread this week. Also, 9-4 straight up. 54-39 against the spread on the season. That's 58%. And they're 50-43 straight up, road teams are. So, in fact, if the Bills win tomorrow night, the 51 wins, if they win, would be the most road wins through 6 weeks we've ever had in the Super Bowl era. So, home field advantage is completely dead this year, and the road team's success this year helps prove that.
Okay, so Monday night, you mentioned it, is line. I saw some sixes earlier. So, Bills, obviously, the big win in primetime at Arrowhead last Sunday night in primetime again, also on the road. This is a big one because I mentioned it going into the game at Arrowhead. They had the third easiest schedule, according to FBI, remaining. Obviously, getting that win and removing that from the schedule, a game at Arrowhead, helps the schedule difficulty. So the dangled carrot is there. They're not going to mess around. I don't think they're, you know, on Monday Night Football, they're not going to. Now, the Titans could obviously beat them, but I don't think it's going to be because the Bills are flat or just not focused. I think they're on a mission this year, and they know what's at stake.
Yeah, I don't think you can stand in front of this Bills train right now. And maybe if that line goes through 7, get 7.5 somehow, but I don't really see that happening. To me, this game is a Bills or a pass. Tennessee's getting some guys back, which will be nice. It looks like Julio Jones and A.J. Brown both might play in this game, so Tannehill might have his full complement of weapons. I don't think I'm going to bet a side on that, though. A couple props I'm looking at are Derrick Henry over his receiving yards. He hit that mark in the first four games. Didn't have a target last week against Jacksonville, but again, it's Jacksonville. And with Jeremy McNichols banged up as the receiving back, I think Henry might get a little bit of use in the passing game. They might be trailing, trying to manufacture him some touches. 13.5 is a pretty low number, so I kind of like that. The other props I'm looking at are just stuff with the Bills' longest play, maybe under on Josh Allen completions, over on longest receptions for Emmanuel Sanders or Stephon Diggs, maybe over on Josh Allen's longest pass. The Titans have been extremely vulnerable to the deep ball this year. They have the second most completions allowed of at least 25 air yards, despite playing one fewer game than pretty much every other team in the NFL. They allow an average completion percentage, but a high yards per attempt. I think this could be a game where Josh Allen doesn't complete a lot of passes, but the passes he completes go for big plays, and the Bills kind of win that way. So that's kind of the way I would play that game, but I don't really have a strong lean toward the side or the total.
That was quite the breakdown. Good job by you.
Well, I don't normally have these picks for Monday night. You always ask me for picks on Monday night. I figured I'd come a little bit more prepared this time.
Yeah, that was great. That was great. So I imagine David Purdom, not imagine, I know David Purdom is doing a write-up for ESPN.com just to the extent of the damage, but it's nice to get the back-to-back wins for the public in weeks 5 and 6. WNBA Finals had an awesome finish tonight. The Sky take care of business in 4 games on their home court. They ended the game, I believe, on a 13-0 run to win by 5. So kind of a collapse or a comeback or both, but the Mercury just missed a couple bunnies, in-and-out shots, and the Sky just chipped away all game, and they actually covered the 4.5 with late free throws, and you know, I think Griner attempted a 3 in the final seconds too. So that ended. Dodgers were up 2-0, then it was 2-2. They were up 4-2, and then blew that, and then lost in the 9th inning. Back-to-back walk-off wins for the Braves, so they're headed to L.A. Atlanta up 2-0 in this best-of-7 NLCS. So a little disappointing for the Dodgers fan here, but I comes with the territory. Braves are tough, and they've gotten some strong pitching, obviously, in the opener with Max Fried, but obviously Scherzer didn't have it tonight. He said he had a little bit of a dead arm. We'll see what the Dodgers can respond. And the bats were waking up, but they're going to need a little bit more offense too. Anything else I'm missing from the weekend? I know we had Saturday as well, but, I mean, there's just so much to recap. The crazy ending with Georgia and Kentucky, Wildcats calling timeouts with 1 second, 2 seconds, whatever it was, to get that touchdown inside the number, but it still stayed under.
I just want to add that it's that rough basketball season for Phoenix, coming to runner-up in the NBA with the Suns, runner-up in the WNBA with the Mercury. Good seasons for both, but got to be frustrating for Phoenix sports fans. One other thing for this past weekend I want to bring up, too, is I just want to give Jacksonville a little shout-out, ending the 20-game outright losing streak, beating the Dolphins. Dolphins are 2-4 against the spread this year, but they have the worst cover margin in the NFL. But Jacksonville finally gets off the schneid at 9:30 in the morning, starting the day off with one chaotic game ending 23-20, ending the day with another chaotic game ending 23-20 with the Seahawks and the Steelers. And then a couple quick lines I want to bring up for next week that popped out.
On that. That's nice symmetry there.
Thank you. That was going to be my line off the top, but then you teed me up on the
I apologize.
It's okay. But two interesting lines for next week, two big lines for next week. Arizona laying 17 to Houston. That's the most points Arizona has been favored by in a game since 1970. So that's pretty interesting there. And then also Detroit and the Rams face off the Matthew Stafford revenge game in LA this week. That line is 14.5 right now. Matthew Stafford never favored by more than 10 points. So he's never been favored by more than 10 points until he faces the Detroit Lions. So I found that pretty interesting for next week. So a couple cool notes to leave you with for next week's games.
So you think it's the Stafford revenge game and not the Goff revenge game?
Well, I'm sure because Goff is the one that's
Dan
angrier.
Campbell calling out his quarterback. What did you make of that?
Yeah. And
he's got to play better.
Detroit's got to do a lot of things better than what they've been doing, but quarterback play is definitely part of it. I kind of feel bad. We talked about how Dan Campbell, we didn't have a whole lot of faith in Dan Campbell entering the year, but he's actually been a pretty aggressive coach analytically.
I like him.
He's been making, you know, like his in-game moves aren't as bad as a lot of people kind of thought they were based on, you know, you can't always read a book by its cover, I guess, when it comes to Dan Campbell, but they still need to get a win. They were plus 275 to be the last winless team, which they clinched when Jacksonville won this week. So next week, they're probably not going to get the win either against the Rams.
Wow, they're the only winless team right now. I didn't really realize that because I'm so used to teams that don't cover as well. I forget, you know, I kind of get it all mixed up sometimes.
You're also not used to Jacksonville winning games.
Yeah, it's what we thought, though. We thought it'd be the Lions or the Jags. Or maybe the Texans, of course. Yeah. Well, yeah, I think the Jets are – I probably have the Jets a little bit higher than most. Remember I did overrated, underrated? I said the Jets were underrated.
Oh, I'll probably be going back to the Jets well next week against New England. I can't lay 6.5 or 7 with the Patriots. I'm hoping it's 7, but I'm seeing 6.5 right now. But I'm not laying any big numbers with New England the way they like to play.
And that'll be in Foxborough as well. All right, McKenzie, great stuff as always. And I know our people appreciate all the work you put in gathering all this data. And we'll be back at it this week, Monday morning. We'll have a podcast preview in the Monday Nighter and then back on the show and the regular podcast all throughout the week. Bald Men on Campus, a new ESPN podcast hosted by Jay Billis, LaFonso Ellis, and Seth Greenberg. These ESPN basketball personalities give you an all-access pass inside the world of college basketball, talking to the biggest names in the sport. That's Bald Men on Campus. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.